Greetings from Long Time No See, the podcast. Every week, we'll be inviting two blindfolded comedians to answer a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Now, let's remove those blindfolds and start the show.
Hi!
What would your opening line with your celebrity crush be?
Loved you in Harry Potter.
Worst date you've been on?
A man bit my neck mole off once.
You did what?
A man bit my neck mole off.
Oh my God, Jack almost fell off his chair.
Be sure to follow and subscribe to the podcast.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Consequence Podcast Network. Hello, and welcome to the Spark Parade, where I geek out with artists and entertainers about their cultural spark of inspiration. I'm Adam Unz, at Spark Parade on all social media. Thanks ever so much for joining me. My guest this week is singer, songwriter, and visual artist Allie X, who spoke to me about her spark, Christopher Guest's stone cold classic mockumentary, Waiting for Guffman. Sounds quite exciting and enjoyable, doesn't it? Well, it is! Allie and I had a great time bonding over being former theater kids, who can really appreciate how this movie lovingly mocks the self-seriousness of community theater. And it was great to revisit Waiting for Guffman because I hadn't seen it, or actually any of the other Christopher Guest mockumentaries, in a long time. Tons of fun was had. So, let's dive right in. Quick Allie facts. Alexandra Hughes, better known by her stage name Allie X, is a Canadian singer, songwriter, and visual artist. She began her career as an indie pop artist in Toronto in the mid-2000s, playing with local bands and writing and recording a handful of self-released albums. After relocating to Los Angeles in 2013, she began working with producers Circuit and Billboard and achieved success with her first single released under the name Allie X, Catch, which peaked at number 55 on the Canadian Hot 100 chart and was well-received by music critics. She released her debut extended play in 2015, Collection 1, followed by her debut studio album, Collection 2, in 2017. This was followed by Super Sunset in 2018 and Cape God in 2020. Allie X's new album, Girl With No Face, was released on February 23rd of this year, aka last week. Quick Waiting for Guffman facts. Waiting for Guffman is a 1996 American mockumentary comedy film written by Christopher Guest and Eugene Levy and directed by Guest. The film's ensemble cast included Guest, Levy, Catherine O'Hara, Fred Willard, Bob Balaban, and Parker Posey. The film's title is a reference to Samuel Beckett's play Waiting for Godot. As in the other mockumentary films created by Guest, the majority of the dialogue was improvised, based on Guest and Levy's story. Because the film is about the production of a stage musical, it contains several original musical numbers written by Guest, Michael McKean, and Harry Shearer. Upon its release, the film earned $2.9 million at the U.S. domestic box office against a production budget of $4 million. Despite its relative box office failure, it has gone on to become one of the most beloved and most influential comedies of all time. And there you have it. Let's get down to business. Here comes my chat with Allie X about Waiting for Guffman. Do you remember seeing Waiting for Guffman for the first time or hearing about it, any of that stuff?
Yeah, so the first time I saw it, I was at a summer program at Boston Conservatory, randomly. I think it was like the choral program or something. And it was, I think, before I went to college. And at that time, I was studying theater. And I was doing this program to get some extra, I don't know, education that summer. Can't really remember why I did it. And I met these two girls from Chicago. And we really hit it off. And they were like, have you seen Waiting for Guffman? I was like, no, what's that? And so they played it for me at the camp. And I just remember just dying with laughter. Like, I was just, I was like, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen. And then from then on, I just watched it over and over, and sort of anyone who could quote that movie or reenact scenes with me would always become an instant friend. And yeah, that's how it started.
Yeah. Did you have any awareness of Christopher Guest or This Is Spinal Tap, any of that stuff?
I think Spinal Tap I'd probably heard of, but I hadn't seen, and I really like wasn't into like culty stuff at that time. This was sort of one of the first culty things that I ever consumed and like fell in love with.
Yeah. And I think two things, like I definitely had a similar experience, and especially with Spinal Tap, it was like something that I was very aware of and knew about, but didn't have any connection to, and I'd never seen it. But it also doesn't really matter. Like one of the myriad genius things about Christopher Guest is that the characters that he creates are so specific and so fully realized that he is that person.
Yeah.
So the only reason I brought Spinal Tap up is like, you know, looking back on those characters now, the difference, like you could easily just not even understand that that's the same person.
Oh, I know. I mean, going from Corky St. Clair to the character he plays in Best in Show, even, it's like so radical.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the influence that this film has had is immeasurable. The number of people who talk about, you know, how touched they are by the themes of it in the story, but also just the structure.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it led into The Office and all of these other kind of fake documentary comedies.
Yeah.
But thinking about this being, you know, not the first of its kind, but kind of setting up a new generation of that style of comedy, just even in and of itself, that that comic structure is such an amazing thing to begin with before you even look at the story.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was being reminded of The Office when I rewatched it this weekend, though I'd never made that connection before.
Yeah. I just read an article that Judd Apatow wrote where he said that Waiting for Guffman is his Citizen Kane.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, I love it. But this story, I think before, and, you know, I keep delaying talking about the star of the show, which is the comedy and the performances and all that. But again, that idea of like this fully realized world, I think the thing that is so unique and so perfect about Christopher Guest's films, all of these films, the improvised kind of mock documentaries, pseudo documentaries, is that the ground that they are built on, the foundation, is love for the situation that he's depicting. And it comes from a place of, you know, silliness, of pointing out the absurd in these very real feeling situations.
Yeah.
But it starts with respect.
Yes. There's such a seriousness about the situation. And then from there, we're able to receive all the absurdity. And that's what makes it so special. I totally agree.
And one of the things that I think makes this so maybe the most relatable and the most real feeling for me is, you know, the world of dog shows is not something that everybody experiences. The world of, you know, folk music is not something that everybody experiences, on and on.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't think everyone experiences small town community theater, but it's something that people are more likely to have had experience with.
Yes. Which is maybe why it's one of the most beloved or the most popular.
Yeah.
Although Best in Show probably is the most popular of his films.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, for good reason, that is also completely amazing. But
it's also amazing. Yeah. But yeah, when you come from like the world of theater, like I do, it's just there's so many moments where it's really poking fun at the art form and like the type of people that do it and how seriously we all take ourselves, and like even like the composer with the, you know, like there's just so many moments where you're just, I'm just so gagged and just LOLing so hard.
Yeah. And it's the same, you know, I'm an actor, and growing up, I don't know, doing plays at the JCC in St. Paul, Minnesota, and everyone feeling like, you know, fucking, I was like 14 or something playing Daddy Warbucks with a bald cap on, and everybody is just like,
yeah,
this is serious shit. This is not amateur. This is the road to Broadway.
It. Yes, this is exactly. I'm going to be discovered tonight. Yeah.
Yeah. So that feeling as well, I mean, brings me even closer to it, whether you have watched small town theater as an audience member or just aware, you know, have friends who did it when you're in high school or whatever. It feels like, you know, a lot of people are touched by it. But that very specific feeling and connection for me of having been in it. And I mean, it sounds like you're the same.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so having that foundation in reality and then bringing in all of these just like insanely talented people, these people who are like, you know, before this movie, people, a lot of them were people who I knew of and liked other stuff that they'd been in. But it feels like the Christopher Guest ensemble that came together is what really gave all of them a boost.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So did you know any of those people before these films?
I would have known Eugene Levy from like American Pie. Is that what it was called?
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Then I would have known Catherine O'Hara from Home Alone, like,
right?
You know, just
right,
the,
right.
The, just those very mainstream sort of appearances, and then seeing them in this context, I became a stan. You know, it's like a whole other experience seeing actors do this kind of work.
And people like Parker Posey, I think I liked indie movies that she'd been in. Like I was obsessed with Party Girl as a teenager. You know, so
me too. Yeah,
I had that image of her in my mind, but I remember thinking like, is she funny? Is she going to fit in with like the silliness of this? And she's so good.
Oh, she's so perfect. Yeah. Her performance in Best in Show was also just so, so funny.
Yeah. So wonderful. And I guess that is, I don't want to spend too much time on Best in Show, but the one element that was added to this incredible ensemble in Best in Show that I think is, you know, just the cherry on top is Jennifer Coolidge. And,
yeah,
you know, her character in Best in Show is like one of my favorite comic characters in history.
We both love soup.
Yeah. Ugh, that monologue, just insane. And that kind of highlights something that I think, you know, is a really important ingredient in all this as well. It's all improvised.
Yeah.
These are all people who are, you know, have an outline of a story and, you know, have goals to beats that they need to hit in a scene.
Yeah.
But they're just making this shit up.
Yeah. And it really, I don't think it would ever work as well if it was scripted, because so many things that make me laugh out loud are like just impulses in the moment. You can tell the actors are just coming up with it spur of the moment.
Yeah. And part of what makes the comedy feel so like loving and sweet, in addition to just being absurd and ridiculous and hilarious, is that it's people having real conversations in character, granted.
Yeah.
And another interesting thing that I read when I was, you know, doing some research for this, somebody saying the irony of a movie about amateur actors trying to put on a play played by professional actors trying to make a movie.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's another thing that I think makes this one special in all of Christopher Guest's films, is just that kind of, you know, the way that those two worlds interact is a really interesting part of it to me too.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like there are parts of it, like the vulnerability and the rejection and like all the stuff that comes with doing that for a living, that you can just tell these actors have experienced a lot of the feelings that their small town constituents that they're playing, like that, like they are actually, you get a sense that they've actually experienced some of like the hurt and the vulnerability and the high stakes, and like it's a comedy, but I feel like it's rooted in this real genuine sort of place or something.
Right. And you know, I think anybody who's been done any kind of theater and has the experience of, I don't even know if it's necessarily about being, having some exciting opportunity dangled in front of you, although that is definitely a specific experience that I've had, but also just working really hard, taking something really seriously and putting it in front of an audience and having this rapturous response gives you this feeling, whether, you know, it's real or not, that it's happening, that people are actually responding to you, that things, there's like the wheels are in motion and there's this like unstoppable momentum that's happening.
Yeah, Totally. Yeah. I mean, that feeling that they are playing on in Waiting for Guffman is definitely a feeling that I know that completely set me on a path. Like when I was a kid and performing at like the school play or doing like the school talent show or like the piano festival in my little city or whatever, that feeling of being on stage and having that response was such a high for me that I became totally addicted to it and thought like, no, this is as good as it gets. Like, this is what I need. This is what I want out of life. I'm going to pursue this. And yeah, I think it's really cute how like, you know, like Eugene Levy's character is like, he's like a dentist, but then he like discovers that he has that side to himself and that, and he wants that feeling. And even when Red, White and Blaine is wrapped, like he then starts to do like he starts to fly to Miami and do his performances there at the old folks home.
Right. Yeah. And it, you know, it's like I've got the bug now and I
Yeah. The entertainment bug.
Yeah. And again, it's like that, you know, the foundation of reality and just tweaking it. So it's like one step above what is real.
Yeah.
Because there are so many people like that in the world who, you know, love performance, feel like it's something that gives them an immense amount of joy, and then have just that tiny bit too much self-belief or just think that something is possible for them that is not really possible.
Yeah. Oh, and but don't we all need, like, it's such a fine line for me because I sort of toggle between feeling like that person and then feeling like, No. Like my hopes are, my dreams are realistic. Like I have what it takes. I have whatever, you know, and I feel like that 5 to 10% delusion is actually required to pursue any sort of artistic career.
Mm.
I really believe that actually. I think without that imagination where you can see yourself in this sort of dreamlike scenario, like that's what keeps you going through all the difficulties of pursuing an artistic career. And it's sort of like, who is anyone to tell anyone else that they can't do it? You know, You don't have what it takes. Nobody really ever knows.
Right. And especially in situations like this, where it isn't like people saying, you know, crying and saying, all I want is this and it's not happening for me. These are people who are having the time of their lives and are getting so much joy out of what they're doing that it's like, who cares? Who cares if they're actually going to be on Broadway or not, if they are happy with it? You know, I mean, I guess Parker Posey's character is a little different because she feels so let down.
Yeah, yeah. Or even how they end with Ron and Sheila in Hollywood, you know? And that was funny rewatching because I don't know that I've watched Guffman in the last decade. And I've been in Hollywood for the last decade.
Hmm.
And so it's so familiar to me now that idea of like big fish in little pond moves to little fish in huge pond. And they're like, they're not understanding why they're not being called by their first name on set.
Right.
They're not understanding why they're not big stars yet, why they don't have a billboard. And it was almost like it was a little like a little dark twinge at the end there. I was like, oh, yeah, Ron and Sheila. Like, I almost wish they hadn't come to Hollywood. Like, you know, I wish they just stayed dreaming in Blaine.
Yeah. Yeah. But in a way, it also fits the characters perfectly that they're like, I mean, you know, the next logical step for us is an Oscar. So,
yeah. Like, and we're travel agents. So we're obviously we know how we're going to get there.
Right. Right.
Can book our own package.
Yeah. Yeah. Time for a quick break because somebody's got to keep the lights on around here. But we'll be right back.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% Lean Ground Sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And just, you know, that very specific thing of being, I think it is very specific to theater. Being in a theater, having a seat that is reserved for somebody that has been invited, who is an agent or a casting director or somebody who, you know, is an artistic director of a theater or something, with the hope that something else is going to come out of it.
Yeah.
Was just like, oh, that's a little too close to home for me.
Oh, I know. I literally just did like an industry showcase the other night in LA. Like, so it's so familiar, and it's so, I don't know, hard to find the words, but it's just lots of feelings. Like it makes me laugh because it's so abstract and like, but it's, I was going to say ridiculous, but it's not ridiculous. It's one, like you said, it's one step removed from almost a realistic thing. And that's what, and then it, so it hits close to home sometimes as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And that feeling of just a tiny bit above reality, I think, also bleeds into the characters themselves, not just the situations, and particularly Corky, who is, you know, the heart of this movie. And I was reading a lot of stuff about, like, you know, the age-old debate about whether people who are not queer should play queer characters.
Right, sure.
And somebody who wrote an article for Esquire who is gay, who said he loved this movie when it came out, and now he kind of finds it offensive and that he gets really upset, or it just feels a bit icky about that character. And like, I'm gay. I understand where that person is coming from. And still, to me, I think in that debate about whether straight actors should play queer characters, I think, you know, part of it is access to opportunity and saying there has to be a reciprocal relationship, that, you know, queer people have to be able to play straight characters, blah, blah, blah. There has to be equal access to opportunity. But also, if straight people are playing queer characters, it has to be people, like with any part, who understand the people who they're playing.
Right.
And this is done with such affection, and it's so fucking accurate. It's like the people who I know who are, you know, small town directors and musical theater people who are exactly like that, like closeted gay people who, mm-hmm. you know, it's just the thing that everybody knows but nobody talks about.
Yeah.
And, you know, knowing who Christopher Guest is, knowing that he, you know, he has a trans kid, he's like, you know, married to Jamie Lee Curtis, who's obviously a huge queer advocate, like all of this
yeah,
stuff
yeah.
kind of adds to that feeling of like, this is a loving portrait of a character. It's not supposed to be something that you're like laughing at him because he's gay. You're laughing at him because he's, you know, deluded and ridiculous and
exactly
whatever.
yeah I agree with you. I'm just an ally, technically, I guess. So I don't feel like I really even have the grounds to like have a strong opinion on it. But I agree with everything you just said. And you get the sense that Christopher Guest is doing a sort of nod to someone that he knew, maybe like someone that he knew and loved and respected. You were reminding me of the very beginning of the movie. The line that had me screaming last night of all the whole movie caught me off guard. It's when he's talking about, like, I thought I might be a construction worker or one of those, you know, one of those guys in those hats. And he goes, one of those, you know, those sweeping sort of hard hats. And I just died. The sweeping sort. He's like, oh my God.
Yeah. And that kind of, really, like, again, like strong self-belief. And there's another form of delusion that's just like, I completely understand all of these concepts. I mean, like the thing at the end where he's talking about, you know, auditioning for whatever, My Fair Lady, is it? Where he's
My
like,
Henry Higgins.
Yeah, yeah. And just like, I think, you know, I've almost nailed the accent. Just like, you have not.
You have not. Or the best scene, not the best scene, it's hard to pick the best scene, but a great scene is when he's in front of the city, like bored, and he's asking for $100,000. And I swear I relate to that. Like, it's not so far off, you know? And it reminds me of, like, randomly of, like, Kanye being on Ellen once and being like, nobody understands that I'm the Picasso of this generation. I just need more money. They need to give me more money.
Yeah. And just Corky having, like, absolutely no concept of what budgets are possible from a small town, and when they're
we need that money, and that's for the pool as well. And he's like, that's for swimming as well. And Corky goes, well, there's just no swimming in my show.
Oh, too much. Yeah, and all of that, like, so much stuff about just the subtleties of the way he kind of slights people or controls people, you know, saying to Eugene Levy, who desperately needs his glasses, that he can't wear them. And then somebody who, another thing I was reading, they're pointing out that, like, he's got his earring in when he's doing the show himself. So it's like that attention to detail does not apply to anybody, or applies to everybody else, but not to him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the stage makeup, so good.
Ugh.
Like, they're all like, there's just way too much make the, like, the old, who's it that does that? Is it Louis Arquette or something that plays the older man, plays Clifford, whatever. And yeah, he's just like, he's very overdone.
Yeah.
He has a very strong eye.
Yeah.
Probably unnecessary.
Right. Which again is like, community theater, amateur dramatics to a T. Like,
mm-hmm.
really, you can have certain pieces of it that really work, that are really well done, and then certain pieces that are like, this is the person who they could find, and this is their vision for what is supposed to happen. And it kind of, like, is this clanging thing that's like, oh God, that makeup does not work. But
yeah. That's actually kind of why, it's one of the reasons why I've moved away from theater so much, is because it's such an imperfect, so often it falls short, I find there's so many moving pieces. All you need is just one bad aspect and the whole show falls apart. You know what I mean? Like bad writing, bad song, lead actress that isn't believable, wrong set design, but when it works, I fucking love it. I really do. I've seen some incredible productions on Broadway. When I was being cast in musicals and stuff, right out of college, I was in the ensemble and I just was in these shows that they weren't very good, you know, like, and the part that kind of killed me was that the whole cast and crew would always think that it was amazing, you know, and I just wanted to be like, guys, it's not that good. Like, like, I'm glad we're all having fun, but like, let's look at what we're doing, you know, and everyone's always just like, this is it. This is the moment. We're in it together. You know, like, and it's so, I know exactly what that attitude is backstage, you know, and it's, yeah, very ridiculous. It makes me laugh. And yeah, I guess I have kind of I'll always have like a theatricality to my performance and a love of theater, but also, It's a very niche kind of world, and it is quite the inner workings are quite funny.
Yeah.
Another reason why I love this film.
Yeah, definitely. That, like, living in this kind of bubble where this, again, tremendous self-belief and people kind of egging each other on and getting caught up in, you know, everyone around
in their own little bubble. Yeah.
Yeah. Feeling like this is the thing, we're all doing so great. And if you are the dissenting voice, it's like,
and it's just like hard for those people to see beyond the theater world. Like, I remember when I started writing music, I still had one foot in theater, and then I was starting to write music and starting to like perform it. And of course, the only people coming to my shows were my friends who were all theater people. And I remember them just being like, you should turn this into a musical. Like, they couldn't see that I was trying to just be a songwriter, which, but bless them. Theater people are so fun as well.
Mm.
I feel like I had the best time in college studying musical theater because socially it was such a place of belonging for me. I'd like struggled socially during high school, and I remember arriving in my musical theater program and just I felt like I belonged somewhere, and that's one of the the beautiful sides of theater as well, is you do live in this bubble, but like you really belong, and like there's this sort of like, it's very communal, very communal. I miss that, actually.
Yeah. And I had a similar experience as a, you know, youth and a teenager, where the, you know, community of being in the theater, the community of being a part of something where everybody's working towards this common goal and is really excited about it, and taking me out of the world of like kids being mean to each other in high school.
Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
Like, it's such a fraught emotional time for everybody. And if you're on the receiving end of bullying or just people being shitheads or whatever, having this refuge where
yes.
it's just joy, and it's just, you know, it can be stressful. It can be, you can have bad days at rehearsal or whatever, but it still feels like this atmosphere of support and everybody wanting to be there and having this like common experience and this thing that makes everybody happy.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
It is.
Yeah. The one other thing that I was thinking, just about the way other people on the periphery of that relate to that world, and how people in the town and people on the city council or whatever are so excited about this thing happening.
Excited, yeah. And the audience reactions during the performance are just like, there's tears, there's so much hope and joy. And
right, yeah.
I actually love the character. I don't know, I forget the name of the actress that plays her, but she's like the descendant of Blaine Fabin. She's like, yeah. As a Fabin, this just means so much to me. She like wants to make it about her.
Yeah, yeah. So amazing. And then, you know, to bring it back to Corky, the I can't remember this actor's name either, but another kind of Christopher Guest regular, the guy who, is he an optometrist? The who is like secretly in love with Corky.
Yes, yes. Oh, I know.
And just that, like, you know, so much of it is heartbreaking, how he's like rejected from the show and like can't be part of it.
I know. And they never really get into like why Corky won't let him audition.
Mm-hmm.
You get the feeling that maybe there is a little, like a little bit of a drama there that you just, you don't ever find out about.
Yeah. And one of, I don't know if this was the actual definitive original ending or if it was just one possibility, but one thing that they had filmed was the two of them moving to New York together and being a couple.
Really?
And that, you know, it was supposed to be.
I never saw that.
Yeah. And you know, I can't remember who in the cast was talking about it, but saying like they really thought it was right. And it was like, that's a really sweet, happy ending.
That would have been a great ending.
But then also saying there is something about letting those characters both never explicitly say that they are gay, never letting those characters express any real like romantic feelings for each other, kind of fits with that world as well.
Of course. I mean, maybe that's more realistic, and it's kind of sadder, that ending, I guess. It is a sad ending to this film. I mean, there's,
yeah,
it's quite, yeah, it's quite sad. It's sort of like they all got this moment of magic and hope, and then they just went back to reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Sad ending, except for my dinner with Andre action figures and what's the lunchbox?
Oh, I know what you mean, but I forgot too.
Oh, it's going to kill me. I can't remember. But all of those toys that Christopher Guest had, like, you know, specifically made for it. But they, and, you know, some of them, like the lunchbox, you can see that they just like put a picture on top of a lunchbox.
Right, right, right.
The sort of not bobbleheads, but the like statues of 80s, you know, Anthony Michael Hall or whatever. He had like a local craftsperson in Austin make those for him. I just thought it was like,
I read last night that he wanted to put up a billboard. No. Yes, yes. He wanted to put up a billboard that said Blaine, the stool capital of America, like in this city that they shot in outside of Austin. And permission was not granted.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, it sounds like the town was pretty receptive and supportive and let them in. There's a scene where there's like townspeople doing some kind of ceremony that happens every year or some like, you know, local holiday. And that was a real thing that was happening in the town.
Oh, like when, yeah, I saw that when there's like some kids and like some people eating like hot dogs. I think that's the bit you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is amazing.
Yeah.
It is remains of the day lunch boxes, which is like, oh, he's like, yeah, the kids really love these. Like, too much.
I like that Corky ends up back in New York as well. Like, he just, you can tell, and again, something that I really like related to now that I didn't fully understand when I first saw this is the you know, he's talking about his off Broadway. And finally, I get the joke, guys. And he leaves looking for this more idealistic life in a smaller town. Right. Like, but then he ends up back in New York because he's a dreamer. Like, he really just, he's never going to be content with anything but that sort of pursuit of theater and fantasy, no matter how many people reject him or turn him down or think he's delusional.
Yeah, exactly. And as in reality, as we were saying before, I think as long as the pleasure to pain ratio doesn't get thrown too out of whack.
That's so succinct. Yeah.
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 Just being able to have that dream be something that is giving you joy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, who the fuck cares? if people are happy and their lives are good,
yeah,
even if they're not having success in that way, then let them be.
Yeah. Yeah. Let them be.
Yeah. I think that is as good a place as any to finish up. This has been so much fun. Nobody has brought me any Christopher Guest project yet. So
that's crazy to me.
I know. Crazy to me too, but I am very, very, very happy to have a chance to talk about one, especially this film. So thank you for that.
Yeah, yeah, totally. What's your brief say? Something that makes you get really excited when you talk about it, and something that sort of set your life on a certain path. That's definitely this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and I guess, you know, as a last thing to touch on, that idea, is there like a specific, you know, you've said your life in the theater and whatever, but I mean, I guess in now, mm-hmm, in your work, in what's happened in your life since you've moved away from theater, do you still feel that influence? Do you, like, are there things about the film that kind of relate to what you've done since then? Or
I think it's just it's one of those pieces of art that it's hard to explain to someone. It's hard to put it into words. It's just the act of the actors doing it gets across this. Yeah, it's a very abstract and niche sort of feeling that I just felt like I really understood the humor and I really related to it. And then that for me became sort of like, I don't know, like anytime, like I said at the beginning of the interview, anytime I met someone who loved that film, I knew that we would get along. Like, it's sort of, and I would even equate it to like my place that I find, like how I belong. I feel like I have a place in like the gay community. Like, that was always sort of like, once I figured that out, I was like, okay, these are my people, and like, this is where I belong. And it just made me feel like, yeah, like not so weird almost. I just got it. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but it was sort of like a moment where I was like, I get this. I belong somewhere in here, and I'll always have this to treasure or something.
Amazing. I mean, it can feel like it's hard to explain, but I think you explained it perfectly.
Okay.
So, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. This has really been lovely.
I really
appreciate you making time for me.
Of course. Yeah. My pleasure.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye. Pure joy. Such a great time. Thanks again to Allie for hanging with me. Her new album, Girl With No Face, is out now, and you should listen to it if you know what's good for you. Actually, you should listen to it even if you don't know what's good for you. Okay? A quick spark of the week from me. You know when you've had a long day and you just need to turn off your brain and look at Disney Plus, and then you end up watching TV made for children? No? Just me?
Well, okay. Anyway, there is a new Disney Plus TV show called Iwaju, and it's really good. It's an Afrofuturist show about Lagos in, you guessed it, the future. It's got cute kids and exciting fantastical tech shit and adventure and action, and it's great. You know, Disney churns out a lot of stuff, like a lot of stuff, too much stuff, so you never know what you're going to get. But this is really great, and you should give it a try, whether you've had a long day or not. And that's about it for this time around. Please follow me on social media at SparkParade. Please rate the show 5 stars and leave me the loveliest review you can muster wherever you can leave reviews. And until next time, bye.
Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Check out our great selection of garage and utility lighting options. In stock, ready to take home today. We carry everything to help you illuminate whatever project you're working on. Shop garage and utility lighting products in store at your nearest Menards. You can also view all of our entire selection of lighting options today on Menards.com. Save big.